Hello, and welcome to part 10 of the 12 Days of Tomfoolery. Say hi to the people, Kate.
Hi, guys. Merry Christmas. So we are moving into the 10th house, angular house, ruled by Capricorn. Capricorn's ruler is Saturn. So we're down to business in the 10th house. It is our career. It is our status. It is how we take what we have done through the first 9 houses and put it back out into the collective. It has positive connotations. It has negative connotations, as do all the houses. But it's the money house. It's the make it or break it. It's the career out there. What's shaking what you're making? Is that always a thing? I don't know.
It's shake and bake, and I helped.
Yeah. That's what I make. That's what's in my 10th house. But yeah, so it's the career house. It's the capitalist house. It's the let's make that money, baby. As is Capricorn. Plenty of other things about Capricorn too, but Capricorn is a money making sign. So, Tiffany, what are you going to start us off with?
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say I'm so glad you made me switch my topics, so that the next episode makes sense, because switching it put gift giving on this episode, which is in line with exactly what you're saying. Not to say that the spirit is taken away from it, but yeah, it's just kind of in line. So I'm going to start with that, and then I'll go into something a little less exciting, but also weird and exciting. So this is called Gifts Unwrapped, the History of Christmas Presents. And let's just dive in, because it's a medium length article. So, like many popular Christmas traditions, people have been exchanging gifts for a very long time. Even though trends, tastes, and gifts may change, the gesture of acquiring, preparing, and bestowing something of value to friends and family is something that's been honored by people all over the world in celebration of the festive period for, and they did write this, thousands of years. So don't at me this time. Today, giving presents to one another forms a central part of Christmas Day, with many families dedicating a lot of time to the custom. For children and some adults too, the chance of getting presents is often the highlight of the festive season. Gift giving is such a widely celebrated event in Western world that huge industries have grown up around it. Billions of pounds, euros, and dollars are spent everywhere creating, marketing, and distributing products that people can buy for one another. It is important, however, to know exactly how this time-honored tradition first began and what it represents, if only to ensure that we don't lose sight of what our presents to one another really mean during this hectic time of year. So, where did they originate? Gift-giving at Christmas is a Christian tradition that is widely practiced around the world. However, the practice is not something that is exclusive to Christianity, as several other religions mark the end of the year with a similar custom, such as Jewish Festival of Lights, Hanukkah, which Kate referenced previous episode, or the Hindu celebration of Panchaganapati in honor of the Lord Ganesha. To Christians, the gifts given at Christmas time are symbolic of the tributes made to the baby Jesus by way of the three wise men after his birth during the story of the Nativity. The Bible's New Testament describes the three magi, Melchior, Caspar, and Balthazar, journeying to a location of Jesus' birth by following a star, and upon their arrival, presenting him with gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. However, the tradition of gift-giving extended long before the founding of Christianity, with roots in festivals of ancient Romans, in particular the festival of Saturnalia, where thanks were given to the bounty provided by the agricultural god Saturn.
Also perfect, sorry to interrupt, but as I said, Capricorn, this house is ruled by Saturn, so perfect, that's coming up.
That little lineup. Oh, Kate, it's so fortuitous of us to switch.
Kismet.
Mm-hmm. Truly. Kismet. The festivities took place from the 17th to the 23rd of December, not September, and were celebrated with a sacrifice and a public banquet, followed by a private gift-giving, continued partying in a wild atmosphere where the social standings were done away with. During this feast, slaves were considered the equal of their masters and free speech was embraced. The day the gifts were exchanged was known as Sigillaria. It took place on the 19th of December. As gifts of value were in contradiction to the spirit of the season, Romans exchanged more modest gifts, such as candles, seasonal figurines, and gag gifts, which were designed to amuse or terrify the other guests. Etiquette dictated that the lowlier gift, the stronger the bond with friendship, and it was said to represent. Some bosses often gave a gratuity known as a sigil arcium to their clients or employees in order to help them purchase those gifts. Unlike many of the more cultish festivals held in Roman Empire, Saturnalia was widely celebrated throughout all of the territories of Rome at the end of the calendar year. As it was a much-loved festival, thanks to its carefree atmosphere, generous gift-giving, and lavish entertainments, people were less inclined to give up its popular traditions. This made it a lot harder to deal with when religious status quo changed in the empire. So, when did the Christian tradition of Christmas presents begin? The conversion of the Emperor Constantine to Christianity in AD 312 signaled the beginning of the end of pagan celebrations in the empire. But early religious leaders couldn't simply ban the popular Saturnalia, as there would be a backlash. There is a theory that they used many of the traits of the festival when establishing Christmas, a rival feast that would take Saturnalia's place, but commemorate a Christian occasion, the birth of Jesus. The exchange of gifts is probably one of those traditions carried over from the old to the new. So here we finally go. The old pagan custom of gift giving was rationalized into Christianity by attaching strong associations with gifts of the Magi to Jesus, and was also likely influenced by the life of Nicholas of Myra, a 4th century saint famed for his fondness of giving people gifts. When he was venerated as a saint, he became more widely known as Saint Nicholas, which is recognizable as the origin of the name of Santa Claus. So, I could go a little further, but to respect time, I'm going to say, there you go. It has been
covered. There you go. That's a wrap on the gifts.
It is a wrap. I just kind of saved you from like a long-winded ending. So. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. She's loving it.
I'm loving it. Yeah. It's going to be edited out, but you did miss an amazing blooper reel of Tiffany freaking out about saying wildly instead of widely.
I swear to God.
It was amazing.
There was, I know. It was 7, 8, 9, 10 takes for me to just say the word widely. Yeah. I kept saying wildly. Yeah. I still don't know why. And I was literally screaming the most unique obscenities you've ever heard. I was very upset.
Yeah, you were. It was really creative. That was like, fuck, 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 cannoli on a cheese, macaroni and peas. It was amazing, actually. I was mesmerized by it. I just stood in silence, I was listening to it.
I was fortified and molded by the old Call of Duty lobbies in the year of our Lord 2006 on Xbox Live. And my obscenities are just something to behold. You're welcome.
They were a Christmas miracle. They were amazing. They were. Okay. Well, continuing in the capitalist vein in career, we're going to talk about, and again, stepping from the ninth, after you got your advanced master's degree from Santa U, then you could be a mall Santa. Then the world is your oyster. There's so many things you can do with that degree. So this is a history of mall Santas in marketing, like how they became a thing. So are you ready?
I've never been more ready. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Gather round, children. This is the story of how jolly old Saint Nick invaded department stores across the country. Generations of children across the United States have been terrorized by the mall Santa, forced to sit on the lap of a stranger. It is really creepy when you think about it. While dressed in their itchiest holiday best, as a photographer dressed in a lurid green elf costume demands a smile. So I guess we do terrorize our children. While there must be some children somewhere who enjoy this annual process, the vast majority of Santa photo ops come out looking like a low-stakes hostage situation at best. So how exactly did this harrowing rite of passage begin? I know. It's a tale of Christian charity, marketing ingenuity, and good old mercenary capitalism. 10th house. Santa's anti-capitalist origins. So we're kind of going to go over what you just went over, but Santa Claus, as Americans know him, corpulent, jolly, dressed in a bright red and white suit, didn't appear till the late 19th century, but his first precursor is nearly 2,000 years old. St. Nicholas was an early Christian bishop who lived in what is now Turkey from 270 to 343, known as Nicholas the Wonder Worker. This guy's got a lot of names. Whew. Legend.
Many hats.
Many hats. Many hats, old St. Nick wore. Yep. He became famous for his gifts to the poor. In one popular story, he secretly provided dowries for three young women who would likely have had to become prostitutes or sold into slavery after their father lost all their money. We went over that in the first episode. Through the Middle Ages, children received gifts in his honor the night before his December 6th feast day. Nicholas's method of redistributing wealth to those most in need made him so popular that he remained a beloved figure even after the Protestant Reformation of the 1500s, which discouraged the veneration of saints. After the decades passed, St. Nicholas evolved into various figures, including Father Christmas in England, Père Noël in France, Sinterklaas in the Netherlands. This last one is the character that made it to America, thanks to Dutch immigrants living in New York City in the 1700s. In 1773, a local newspaper used the anglicized Santa Claus for the first time, reported that a great number of sons of the ancient saint celebrated the day with great joy and festivity. Next part, Santa starts to sell. Almost as soon as he arrived in America, Santa's days as a normal, charitable guy were numbered. Stores began advertising the concept of Christmas shopping as early as 1820. And within 20 years, the jolly old elf's image started popping up in print ads for various businesses' holidays. He was fast to move into that capitalist lane. This is also the period when Santa started putting on weight. In his now iconic 1823 poem, yeah, but not a few Santa Claus. Me too. It's okay. In his now iconic 1823 poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, a.k.a. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, Clement C. Moore described the titular gift giver as having a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Again, me too. Several decades later, the Salvation Army got in the Santa game too, when they needed help paying for the Christmas meals that they were handing out to families in need. Starting in the 1890s, the group hired unemployed men to dress up in Santa suits and solicit donations from the holiday shoppers. I wonder if they had their degrees from Santa U. I find that highly suspicious. They're not in the Santa Union. Yeah, we need to talk to the.
Is it really called Santa?
Talk
Union?
To the Salvation Army. Santa University, I think so. We'll have to listen to the last episode. I don't remember. Is there actually a Santa Union?
Yeah, that's
I wonder if there is. I wonder if they're under Actors Equity. I wonder if it's an equity contract. I don't know. Good question.
Well, you can look that up. The next part I talk about my final topic and then wrap that up at the end.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. So the next part of the article is Santa goes shopping. Mm-hmm. After Santa took off as de facto Christmas mascot, it didn't take long for store owners to realize that they could capitalize off more than just his image. Why stop at a life-size Santa Claus in a window when you could hire an actual live Santa to greet shoppers? There's some debate about which enterprising business owner first decided to don a Santa suit, but James Edgar is now generally acknowledged as one of the first department store Santas. Edgar, known to his friends as Colonel Jim, owned a dry goods store in Brockton, Massachusetts. And in 1898, I know, right? He traveled to nearby Boston to have a Santa suit tailored to fit him. He brought it back to Brockton, wore it to greet his customers, and more importantly, their children, and the rest is history. Macy's, founded in 1858, also claims to have hosted its first Santa in 1861. Though few details about this early appearance remain. The following year, famous illustrator Thomas Nast grew him straight from the dirt for the first time for one of his Harper's Weekly's covers. Published in the January 3rd, 1863 issue, the image showed Santa dressed in an American flag-inspired suit visiting Union soldiers on Christmas Eve, which we also talked about in the first episode. The rise of Santa photos. Whether invented by Macy's, Colonel Jim, or someone else, live Santas were solidly a thing by the turn of the 20th century. But the trend of having your photo taken with old Saint Nick didn't take off for another few decades. There's some debate about who started this racket, but Washington State's Arthur Happy French is wildly... Oh my God, now I'm doing it! Is widely... Jesus Christ...
Girl, you credited, did better than me.
Yeah, I got it on the second try. As one of the first innovators in this area. As the story goes, French was sitting in his office at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer one day in 1943 when he noticed the long line of children waiting to meet Santa Claus at the nearby Frederick and Nelson department store. The following year, French took a leave from the newspaper and set up a shop at the store, snapping candid photos of children sitting in Santa's lap and selling them to parents who wanted a souvenir of the occasion. Capitalist as hell. The operation was so successful that he did it again in 1945, making $10,000, more than three times his annual newspaper salary just in December. Damn. I know, right?
Just popping off.
In 1946, I know, he's making some cash. In 1946, he quit the paper altogether and made Santa photos and later Easter Bunny photos his full-time job. Good for him. Santa, in general, also became more popular during this period thanks to several factors. Coca-Cola debuted its first Santa in 1931, and while the company didn't invent him, they did help standardize his appearance as the red-cheeked, red-suited fellow we still know today. In 1947, Miracle on 34th Street premiered, cementing the department store Santa in pop culture lore and inspiring children everywhere to believe that their Santa might actually be the real one. Macy's, too, was responsible for sending Santa to the A-list, having him close out the inaugural Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 1924. The parade has ended with a Santa grand finale every year since, marking the official start of the holiday season and reminding parents that their kids can visit Santa in a local Macy's. Modern mall Santas. While many shopping malls and department stores have fallen victim to the comparative ease of online retail over the past 20 years or so, mall Santas, shockingly, have not. That's why you go to Santa U. Career for the ages. Yeah. It's recession-proof, technology-proof. Actually, it's not technology-proof. We're going to get into that in the next episode. But The only major disruption to the Santa photo industry came in 2020 when the coronavirus pandemic forced many stores to scrap their in-person Santa attractions. Even Macy's canceled their iconic Santa visits, which in New York City requires a reservation, for the first time in the store's history. But Santa, magical being that he is, adapted to the times. Some stores, like Macy's, offered virtual visits where children could interact with Santa video link. Again, we're going to talk about this next episode. While others station Santa behind plexiglass or inside a giant snow globe. Enterprising retailers even offered Santa hats customized with face shields. By 2021, however, things were more or less back to normal. If a child is willing to sit on Santa's lap, then he'll be there waiting on his department store throne. Oh, capitalist Santa. God love him.
You know, I still have a lot of respect for the store owners that found a way to turn a dime into a dollar, but also like respect.
Oh, yeah.
We were going through a tough time and make sure people were safe. You know, it's a fine line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Respect it.
Absolutely. Me too.
I'm so glad that we'll have this random truck going.
I know, yeah. It's just a little ambiance. Ambiance for you.
We're just doing our best, and you get this free ambiance. It's like you're in their room with us. So you can't buy that.
Yeah, it is. No, you can't. It's priceless.
Capitalist game. Priceless. Not here. Just free. This is free real estate. So I'm actually going to talk about a somewhat Dutch tradition, but you'll see. Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet. And I chose this article to be not funny, but a little less serious and respectful. So, okay, sorry. Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet, which is Black Pete. Why a holiday has me talking to my kids about blackface. Kate's going to find out with the rest of y'all. So,
yeah.
I will be speaking in the first person. So, when my son was 5, I took him to see the World Press photo exhibit. I'd taken him every year since he was a baby, but that year, 2015, he was noticeably more cognizant of what he was seeing and had more questions. The recipient of the World Press Photo Multimedia Award was the video of Eric Garner's death at the hands of Staten Island police, which my son watched with some confusion. Who are the men in dark clothes? The police. What are they holding that man on the ground for? They are arresting him. Why won't they let him breathe? Because he's black. I didn't say that, even though it was the most immediate and honest answer that sprung to my mind. It just seemed like too much to lay on a five-year-old. Talking to children about racism is complex, and according to Margaret A. Hagerman, sociologist and the author of White Kids Growing Up with Privilege in a Racially Divided America, when white parents talk about raising white kids in predominantly white communities, talk is not enough. Instead, Hagerman says we still need to instill compassion and openness to diversity around our actions. So, we live in the Netherlands, a country that generally prides itself on its liberal tolerance and post-race identity. There is an attitude of being blind to race, making racism in the country seem like an impossibility. Sensitivity to political correctness is seen as a typically American response based on the United States' own dismissal of racist history. Incidents such as Garner's killing put America's race divided in an undeniable light, but other indications of racism were more subtle. In the Netherlands, we have entered the season of Sinterklaas, a major Dutch holiday, similar to Christmas in the United States. That has attracted increasing criticism for its racist tones over the past decade, both within and beyond Dutch borders. The tradition is this. On the second Saturday of November, Zwarte Piet, Black Piet, arrives in the Netherlands on a steamboat from Spain, along with Sinterklaas, a towering, thin, and plushly dressed figure. Hundreds of people gather to watch the steamboat arrive, with Pete's dancing and waving while brass band and music plays, until Sinterklaas disembarks on a white horse, with the Pete's walking aside to greet and offer treats to children. The ritual repeats in various cities across the Netherlands until December 5th, the name day of St. Nicholas. Pete is, according to folklore, an assistant of Sinterklaas and of Moorish descent. Traditionally, since Pete's first appearance in a children's book in 1850, Pete is portrayed as a very dark-skinned character with large red lips, curly black hair, and giant hoop earrings. When Pete appear in person, they are portrayed by volunteers in blackface. Oh, unlike Santa Claus, yeah, it's exactly not what great. You think it is. It's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
So, until Santa Claus, who comes one night a year, Sinterklaas and Pete stick around for a few weeks, leaving presents for children and shoes left out by the fireplace each night. A nightly news program called Sinterklaas Journal covers the adventures of the hijinks of Sint and his servants, and it makes the experience both magical and believable for children. But we are also inundated with news of protests, riots among these in favor of the Piet tradition and those who wish to see it end. And discourse between the Dutch politicians and international bodies such as the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, which urged the Netherlands to put an end to racial stereotypes such as blackface, is less joyful. As a parent, I want my children to participate in local customs, to enjoy them with innocence and wonder. But I also want them to be sensitive to others and, obviously, not racist. I came to the Netherlands as an expat, intending to stay a couple of years. Having children and deciding to raise them here made me an immigrant. And one of those unspoken rules of such statuses is to make an effort to integrate with your adoptive country, its customs, its ideals, and as much as possible. For the most part, that's really easy here to do. But during peat season, it's not that easy. While the dark and overall black makeup has in some areas been replaced by a less heavy-handed sooty look, the story being that Pete is, air quotes, dirty from climbing through chimneys to deliver presents. The origins of the character and his appearance remain steeped in racism. And explaining racism to children in the context of one of their most celebrated characters, most kids want to dress up as the mischievous Pete. I recently asked my son, now 8, whether he thought blackface was offensive. He has no real sense of what racism is, no concept of blackface as a tool for perpetuating unflattering racial caricatures, and he still believes Zwarte Piet exists rather than being a white Dutch person in makeup. So his response sounded a bit like Megyn Kelly's sentiment that blackface was okay when she was a kid, as long as you were dressing as the character. He also offered that while he's never seen someone in whiteface, he wouldn't find it offensive as much as weird. I told him it was never okay, which he seemed to accept, but not really fully understand. You hear a lot here that Pete is not meant to be offensive, and therefore is not. I have the choice of treating it as a harmless tradition that Dutch people have enjoyed for generations and hold very dear, or explaining it to my children as why blackface is never okay. My children, I also have two daughters, 5 and 6, says the author, don't care what color Pete is. They love the character and the holiday, and they have no sense of how or why it's hurting and offending people. It's my job to explain the issues without ruining the magic for them. So I've allowed my children to dress as Pete in Renaissance-like attire, complete with a feathered cap, but I have drawn the line at blackface, and I still have a visceral reaction to seeing Pete's everywhere around me. We keep the parts we like, and we don't allow them to participate in the parts we don't like, even if it makes me look like an oversensitive American. Regardless of where we live and what others find acceptable, my kids need to learn from the first example of their dad. If I ignore something I believe to be wrong, I'm failing them. So I really applaud this dad, and I know I didn't give y'all the full, like, who is Black Pete, what is he thing, but I just started here so I could round you out with some facts. So,
yeah.
I know. Yeah, it's no it bueno. Was just really intense, but I feel like he was being really respectful of a thing that has perpetuated through time, and they just are like, hey, this is our culture, what the heck? And I'll just dive right in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to speak based on what I've looked up. So, Black Pete is someone who goes around with Santa Claus, which is their St. Nicholas. So he follows him around. And from what I've discovered, he is a servant or helper of Santa Claus. But he derives from, like, Northern Africa.
Does that mean southern... slave? Or does that mean
yeah, servant? It does mean slave. Yeah. It's very interchangeable. Big. Everything I looked at was super interchangeable. So the earliest known illustration of the character comes from an 1850 book by the Amsterdam school teacher Jan Schenkman, which he depicted Zwarte Piet. So I'll just say Black Pete to make my life easier. But yeah, Black Pete was a black Moor from Spain. But when you hear Moor referenced, it's like Northern Africans or more... Pakistani, that area, like top right part of Africa, bottom left part of Indo-Asia.
Asia, I think.
Yeah.
Asia. Yeah.
Someone with darker skin, but the Dutch represent him to basically just be, think racist cartoons from the 40s and 50s. It's literally like someone dark brown or almost painted black, cartoonishly red lips, you know, they're dressed like this. It's really not great. Let's just follow this article I have pulled up called Who is Black Pete? Continuing Evolution. And we'll just go over that and wrap it up. And if you want for more info, I'm happy to do so. So follow this character from his introduction in 1850 through the 20th century and end in the 21st with growth and intensifying protests that raised increasing questions about blackface and racism. During this lengthy time, the tradition has evolved from his black servant character to being primarily responsible for the discipline into a fun-loving, joking sidekick to the more remote Santa Claus. So it is Pete's that do acrobatic stunts and distribute treats. The growing controversy comes from the debate that this character intensified in 2013 with the UN Human Rights Commission weighing in on the topic. Activity increased, particularly in Amsterdam, through the general consensus was that the folk tradition was not within the purview of the government to legislate. A new protest group formed, Zwarte Piet Niet, and the festival was challenged in court. Amsterdam moves to, I can't read this, Rijt Pieten or Soet Piet's characters with smudges from coming down chimneys. Santa Claus Journal also introduces change. These changes bring back the backlash from traditionalists, particularly in the more rural areas. Santa Claus festivals surprise, in other countries. Surprise. Exactly. Increasingly showing non-blackface Pete's. Backlash from traditionalists continues as the KOZP moves into activism to more cities. More of the demonstrations are quiet and orderly, though there is provocation and violence in some places from the pro swore to Pete counter-demonstrators. The controversy continues through more cities, and they are welcoming of sooty or chimney Pete's. In June of 2020, the Dutch Prime Minister told how these views have changed in the last 7 years and how he believes the time is coming where there'll be no more Zwarte Piet or Black, or sorry, Zwarte Pieten or Black Piet. So something I haven't brought up until now, which they will now, is called More Sooty Piets. So typically the argument that was given after this started to be a problem was that Sooty Piets are showing up at Sinterklaas arrivals. Amsterdam and Oosterwijk have moved entirely to Pieten faces who are marked with sooty smears from going, and here's your answer, up and down chimneys. Which I had read several other articles, one of which liked to point out that it's interesting that they use that as an excuse because he had clean clothing and only had a very black face. So
Interesting.
I don't know, man.
Oh my God. And I,
go ahead.
This is horrible. And I also love that they're like, you know, this is like the typical conservative response, but like, we don't mean it to be offensive. So don't be offended by it. And you know, I get like some people can get too precious about certain things. Sure. But like, this is pretty, I think it's pretty cut and dry offensive. Like, it's bad. Ugh, it's bad. And I forgot about that Megyn Kelly thing. It's so gross. I forgot she said that.
Yeah.
Yuck.
But we can round it out and just say the whole thing is not okay. They can't keep tacking it on to tradition. They've got to let it go.
Yeah. I hope that.
We're not going to sit here and pretend we know a lot about Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet. It's not appropriate, but we still decided to talk about it because we wanted to make sure that we're being honest about the things we cover. So while it's not the most fun and most hilarious thing we've covered, I'm just going to round it out and say I found an article and I'm just going to talk about the end of it where they talk about the tide turning. So it's a quick snippet and then we're going to wrap it up. 2021 has brought a sea of change in attitudes and practice regarding Pieten in the Netherlands. So surveys show that a majority of local Sinterklaas arrivals in all but the smaller towns and villages will use alternatives to blackface. As one spokesman said, the adjustment is inevitable.
Good. It should be inevitable. God damn it. People are so messed up. Well, good. I'm glad it's changing, at least.
I know this is like a less happy note, but can you bring it up a little happier and say bye to the people, Kate, and make us feel a little better? Can I put all of that stress on you?
Yeah. Let me tell you guys something super depressing. Kate, you want to brighten them up? I mean, Merry Christmas, and we'll be happier in the next episode, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Merry Christmas, though. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.